2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
This is the MLB NBA Daily Dispatch Hybrid Podcast going on today. This is brought to you by the good folks over at DFSArmy.com. Hey, if you're not signed up with us, make sure you go to the website and check out all the packages that we got going on. We got a couple going on right now, so make sure you check them out all for yourself over there, DFSArmy.com. Make sure you join us. The best part of all, get to join us in the Slack chat going 24/7. Some people get some sleep, some others don't. It's usually going with some sort of thing. We got the MLB channel, NBA, PGA, everything going on around this time of year, so it's a great thing to get into. I'll wear it out. I'll say it again. DFSArmy.com, my friends. That's where it's at. I'm your host, Al Walsh. Find me on Twitter at 14a.walsh. Find my co-host, Keith Hall, over there at Boomers DFS Daddy. So, Keith, I know it's been a while since we've been here on the podcast. I hope all is well with your health and conditioning now, but we got a lot to get to today. A 3-game NBA slate, a 15 MLB game slate. Not going to hit on all 15 games, but we're going to do a little bit of some.
Yeah, my body is now agreeing with me again.
Is your body a temple once again?
Yeah, it's a temple, and it's about as clean as it's been in years. So
that's good. That's good to hear.
We're good to go. So let's get this show rolling and have some fun with it.
Indeed. All right, so we're not necessarily going to do a DFS breakdown of the 3 NBA playoff games, but hopefully something in there can kind of guide you to the leading path. We are a fantasy sports show, so I'm sure something will come up. Don't you worry. Tonight we've got the Milwaukee Bucks at the Toronto Raptors. Now, if you did read my first-round playoff preview, you will have noticed that Giannis Antetokounmpo is on the cover of the damn thing, and for good reason. I predicted the Bucks to win this series in 6. Toronto, look, we know that they suck in game ones. That's their steal. That's what they do. But I do expect Toronto to come out firing on all cylinders tonight. So, Kyle Lowry, who absolutely sucked in game one, should be rearing, ripping and roaring. We're going to see Toronto at their most desperate tonight. So I'd expect Lowry, DeRozan, and probably even Valanciunas, who I was very big on in game one, to step up in this one. Joe Val did not have that big game one because, look, when you're down by double digits, your team is going to be playing in hurry-up mode, so no need to have Joe Val out there, but you should be seeing a swing of things in this one.
Not only that, but when Greg Monroe's dominating you in the paint, then, what else are you going to do? You're just going to sit down, take your medicine, and go put your hands between your legs.
I think that is exactly what happened, word for word. So.
Wow, Greg Monroe. Have yourself a game, brother. So
first playoff game too, by the way.
Yeah, it was. That was.
I was shocked to see that.
I was equally as shocked. I'm looking for Chris Middleton to really kind of get into a groove here today. I think that if Milwaukee really wants to take this in, 5-6 games, that it can't be all on the hands of Giannis. We know that Giannis is a freak. He's a stud. But even studs and freaks need some help. So,
I want that on my tombstone.
Russell Westbrook needs that on his tombstone.
Hey!
Jesus Christ. You're sitting there going, what can change? It's a 7-game series. Teams make adjustments. And as DFS players, we also need to make adjustments at the same time and understand, how players are going to kind of react and go and everything that, you know, they try to do as well. They're going to do whatever they can to shut down Giannis and make everybody else beat him. And now whether they can do that, I don't know. But look for Damari Carroll and PJ Tucker to be stuck on them like white on rice even more than they were. I think they are really, really kind of nice little options that you can kind of stick in there as a contrarian play today. I don't know what their prices are. I'm just we're speaking just hypothetical terms. I'm not looking for value. That is something I do want to touch on.
Oh, okay.
When it comes to NBA DFS basketball in the playoffs, obviously we saw scores take a major drop from what we were seeing in the regular season. We were normally seeing, you know, scores around the 325, 350s on DraftKings, winning tournaments. Well, like, I think the tournament that we were in the other night, I think 310 won it.
Well, you know why. I mean, there's no Lakers, no Suns, no Nets to pick on in these. So
yeah, so, well, not only that, but, you know, the pace in the playoffs is a lot slower. So, you know, there's not as much possessions. It's more matchup-driven, in my opinion, than it is, you know, pace and tempo and stuff like that. Now, when you get two teams like the Rockets and the Thunder, and they're clicking on all cylinders, then yeah, you can, you know, load up on that game, and the pace can go up, and, you know, go to town. But, you know, the guy, LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, those aren't the guys that are going to win you tournaments in the NBA for DFS. It's going to be the Tony Snells. It's going to be the Serge Ibaka's. It's going to be those type. It's going to be the secondary players, because everybody's going to have, you know, Giannis and LeBron and, you know, those guys in their lineups. It's what you do with the rest of your salary and roster construction that's really going to set you apart. And that's where you should be paying a lot of your attention and focus. Find a guy that you can't live without, you know, whether tonight it be Giannis or, you know, whoever. DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, you know, whatever. And then figure out who you want to pair them with. And get creative. Now, I'm not talking about playing a guy like, you know, Matthew Dellavedova that can go out there and get you 12 in 30 minutes and literally average like 0.25 fantasy points per minute. I'm talking about the guys that can, you know, like a Bobby Portis the other night. You know, his contributions that's going to, you know, be coming out of nowhere. And don't worry so much about the – if you get a guy below 10%, then you better either hold your breath or pray to the gods that you pray to, because usually they're not good plays.
Well, I pray to one god, but, you know, to each their own. But yeah, it's certainly an interesting thing to look at. And, you know, one thing that was very big that we saw there in the first round, a lot of the underdogs either covered or just won outright. You know, we saw that a couple times there with the Jazz winning outright, the Bulls winning outright there. You know, of course, the Bucks, who, you know, we're just talking about. So I think you're going to see a lot of these teams pop off, come back big. But absolutely, certainly, for sure. All right, let's talk about that second game there. Speaking of teams looking for redemption, we're talking about the Boston Celtics hosting the Bulls. And it's been a kind of somber day in Boston the last 2 days. The Bruins lost last night. Celtics lose on Sunday night, both playoff games for these teams. Both raucous crowds going on. Everybody walking home sad. But again, I think this is a Celtics team that kind of was shell-shocked with the news of Isaiah Thomas's sister dying the day before they start their playoff run. So, you know, I know everybody wanted to rally around Isaiah Thomas. By the way, Boston fans, I must tell you this. When Isaiah Thomas is at the free throw line, you can't chant MVP. I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but when he was at the foul line and the Celtics fans started chanting MVP, I believe he was 0-3 from the line. So something about that does not work out right. So just, you know, while he's at the free throw line, you know, just shut up.
Yeah.
That's how I'd approach this race.
Yeah, there's three guys that you can chant MVP for. In my opinion, it's Westbrook, it's Harden, and it's Kawhi.
Oh, LeBron? No, okay.
Not this year. Now he might be
chant for him.
Well, I guess they could chant for him, but I mean, come on, really? Don't make your
MVP every season.
That's what they used to. That's what they always say. Oh, he could win the MVP every season. Well, then why doesn't he?
I don't know. Did you know didn't the Cavs not win a game when he wasn't on the court this season? The point differential is so ridiculous. I'm saying, we all know LeBron.
Okay, and when Russell Westbrook hit triple doubles, the Thunder were like 32-9 or something like that.
You're bringing up a stat.
So you were too.
Yeah, but it's in terms of actually winning. Like, that's how important you.
Oh, I know, and it's the same with Russell Westbrook.
The only reason LeBron's not getting MVP is just because
Harden and Westbrook had absolutely just crazily phenomenal years.
But we're talking about like again, but legit though, LeBron's not winning MVP because he didn't play in every game. Well, I'll give him. He's been to six straight finals. That's a lot more extra basketball probably than all those guys combined.
And so, you have to throw in there the Olympics and international competition and stuff. And yeah. I get that. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. I guess it's just
one of those. All right, we got to get that Bulls Celtics.
that was a tragic, you know, kind of thing. And if you watched Isaiah Thomas, like, I felt sorry for the kid. I mean,
yeah, definitely.
You just watch him, and it's just so hard to play when that has happened, and you're sitting there going, you know, this guy is just digging as deep as he possibly can, and it's not working. I mean, he had a good game, don't get me wrong, but my goodness gracious, the rest of if you're the Celtics, like, seriously, just step up, do something, you know, help a brother out. It just was so bad, and there's no way to really even kind of quantify it that it just...
Well, here's one thing, right? Like, the Bulls match up pretty well with the Celtics. I mean, not all that was guys just not stepping up. I mean, Jimmy Butler taking over in the second half was the definitive difference in this game. He was just a madman. And it's crazy, too, because going into this series, we kind of talked about it. Like, the Celtics have more than enough capable bodies to throw at them with Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart, guys like that. But, you know, Boston or, you know, the Bulls – we kind of wrote them off here, but they have a pretty damn good team. You got Rondo and Wade, who've got loads of playoff experience. You know, not to mention Butler himself. I mean, they've got guys here that can do things. And of course, Robin Lopez down low presents a very tough matchup for the Celtics. However, I think we're going to see a much different Celtics team tonight. I think, you know, Avery Bradley had a pretty good game there, in the opener, but you know, I think he could do a lot more. Probably going to see more from Thomas. And Al Horford, who was a very sneaky play, I really didn't hear anybody talking about him, but, you know, one of the reasons that you're probably not going to see him pop up in projection so much is because he's a center, and standard centers haven't really done that well against the against the Bulls. No, he's playing more power forward, and that has been one of the best matchups in, you know, post-All-Star break since Taj Gibson has left the Bulls. I mean, guys just going at Mirotić and Portis. It's golden, my friends.
Yeah, and if you would have been part of the Army the whole year, you would have known that we said that Amir Johnson's playing the center and Al Horford is playing the power forward. We call them the four and the five here in the Army. they have distinct... ways that we can attack, and we've been attacking it like that all year long, and it's a great point to bring back up, because it doesn't show up like you said, it shows up in our projections, but it, when you're just blindly running an optimizer, it's not going to show up like that because of the fact that, you know, other sites don't take that into consideration. You know, we bump down Amir Johnson a little bit, and I give a little bit of a boost to Al Horford. And that worked out fantastic. Now, nobody in their right mind expected, well, okay, maybe we all did, but Sideshow Bob to come out and just go absolutely bananas, but
It's a phenomenal matchup.
oh, that matchup has you just like sitting there wondering what in the heck the why can't the Celtics get somebody to defend the five?
Well, they got plenty of draft picks this year to get it figured out. So, and in a point guard laden draft. By the way, I got to bring up my boy Colin Coward. Brought up a fantastic point on Monday's The Herd Show. So he says, you know, the Celtics were, you know, it's kind of their fault that they lost game one, and he brings up a great point. So they could have had Jimmy Butler at the trade deadline, right? And they didn't want to give away all the draft picks that they've had. Well, you know, in this playoff series, those draft picks, you know, they're not on the court. You know, they're not doing a great job. And you know, you talk about the Celtics roster. You got Isaiah Thomas, who's almost 30. You know, he's in the peak of his career. You got Al Horford, who's just above 30. You know, Jay Crowder's not getting any younger. Avery Bradley's in a, you know, contract situation that he's not happy about. So the Celtics window really isn't that big. And you know, if they really wanted to compete with the Cavaliers, that would have been you know, great way to go. And you know, you take a look at the way Paul George is even playing right now. I mean, he's playing lights out, so he would have even been a great addition. But you know, if the Celtics don't win this series, you just look right back to the trade deadline and say, you know, you had to pull the trigger there. And you know what, like, and it's funny too, because this draft has so many point guards in it. Guess what? The Celtics got their point guard. So you know, all these draft picks that they have, I mean, maybe they can pull something off, you know, before the draft and get that Butler or that Paul George that they need. But guess what? It's going to be too late. You know, the playoffs are going on right now.
Yeah, as far as maybe as far as this, but I really honestly don't think that they expected to catch the Cavs for the one seed.
Good point as well.
You know, and I don't think that they were really kind of gearing up for this year. I think they're really kind of gearing up for next year. And you know, just catching the Cavs kind of became a Christmas present.
How about an Easter basket since we're
Hey, there
in
you
that
go.
holiday? Yeah.
It's like, you know, Jesus Christ resurrecting on the third day. Oh my gosh. You know, you sit there and you're like, all of a sudden you're like 2 games out, and then you're a half game out, and then all of a sudden you're 1 game out. You can't beat the Cavs, but you overtook them for the one seed. Congratulations, you accomplished something. But I think that's really where they were kind of going with that is, you know, yeah, we can get Jimmy Butler, but we could probably get him again next year, maybe for cheaper, and not have to worry about, you know, giving away quite so much because do we really want to go after him this year and try to, you know, beat the Cavs? I don't think they can. You know, we've seen what LeBron does in playoff type atmospheres,
Sure, yeah.
and I just don't think that it's going to be possible. I mean, I know everybody wants to see the Cavs and the Warriors again. I would love to see the Celtics and the Warriors just because the Celtics, I think, can beat the Warriors. I think it'd be a more evenly keeled matchup. But the Warriors, let's not act like the Warriors don't have their own problems right now.
I think they'll be fine.
I know they looked good against Portland. I'm not saying that. But honestly, when you're talking about, you know, the best accumulation of shooters in NBA history on one team, don't you think they should have absolutely just blown Portland out of the water?
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, that's kind of the situation that I wrote about with the Raptors with Kyle Lowry, how him just getting back to the lineup, you got new pieces there with Ibaka, PJ Tucker as well. You know, it's going to maybe take a little bit of getting used to. I know Durant was there for a couple games before the end of the regular season, but, you know, they've been playing without him for a while, and not only playing, but excelling without him for a while. So to add him back into the mix, such a focal point of the offense, look, I'm sure it took a little bit of getting used to, but all in all, I think that talent is going to win out over most of these teams and most games in the playoffs. So we got that to look at. Let's just touch real quick on this last game where we got the Utah Jazz, who are up 1-0 on the Clippers. The Clippers are just a mess. I can see this one going bad. But the series, I mean. But tonight, the Clippers should be back. Again, we just got three games that feature teams looking to get back who lost home court, just trying to get back up there. So, I mean, look, no Rudy Gobert for the Jazz tonight. They said he should return at some point in the series, but I mean, I'm looking forward to DJ just dominating down low because Blake Griffin is useless in the fourth quarter. And it should be a nice Chris Paul to DeAndre Jordan show in this one.
Yeah, I think, honestly, that the Clippers are just kind of – they're looking to – because you got – Chris Paul, you've got J.J. Redick, you've got Luke Richard, and by like a good 60% of their core is, besides DeAndre Jordan, are free agents after this season.
Yeah,
I just think they're, you know,
they've checked out already.
Isn't it Chris Paul? Hasn't he never gotten out of the first round? Or is he only?
I believe
has
he
it
made
happened
it to
once?
The second. I believe it. Yeah, it's something ridiculous. I believe he's made it to the second round, though.
Okay, so I remember that was a stat a couple years ago, and I couldn't remember if he had or he hadn't yet. But
well, what about a couple years ago when they had the Rockets up 3-0 in the, or I'm sorry, 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals?
They had
finals.
The Thunder up 3-1 too. Ugh,
these guys.
I mean, in 2013, they had the Thunder on the ropes. And we came back and beat them.
Yeah, it wasn't 3-1 though, right? They would have went up 3-2, I believe. And like they had them right there in OKC, and they pulled some ridiculous.
I thought they were up 3-2. Maybe I don't know, but they had us on the ropes, and we came back and we ended up beating them. That was, I believe, that was the year that we went to the finals against the Heat. I can't remember if that was.
I told you so as well.
I can't remember if that was that year, if it was 2012. I get all those years mixed up, but you know, we have such a short history here, but you know, we have such a rich playoff history. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that the Clippers need to stop worrying about what the refs call and just worry about playing basketball, and if they do that, they will be a lot better. I think I don't know. I just think it's that's a lot of personalities, and sure. I've never really thought that they were a really good basketball team. Like, they've got players, they can win games, they can play, but I don't think they're a good team.
I hear you.
So
it's interesting because apparently there are rumblings that not many players in the Clippers are happy about the way that Chris Paul plays. Like, he's a point guard that really needs to get that assist number. And, you know, he's not a big, you know, swing the ball around the perimeter kind of guy. And a lot of Clippers know this and they kind of hate him because of it. That's inner rumblings. I read that somewhere. So
I've never heard of that, but
Belita, yes, top key, top class, low key kind of shit.
There
all right,
you go.
So again, with that series, I look for the Clippers to, you know, just Chris Paul and DeAndre. Hey, if he's a one pass kind of guy, hopefully it goes to DeAndre Jordan. That's
let's make no mistake about it. If they don't win tonight, going into Utah for Let's see. The first round is 2-3-2, is it not?
No.
So they did change
all the series are
so two, okay. They one. Did change it. That they're all 2-2, 1-1-1.
Right.
So if they go down 2-0, you're looking at best case scenario coming back to Staples down 3-1.
Yes.
You know, because going in and winning 2 in Utah is not easy. And if you can't win 1 in your home court, good luck winning 2 in Utah, because that's when this pace is going to slow down to a snail's pace. And, like, the one thing I am interested to see is we've talked about it. I think it was beginning of last year when Rudy Gobert was out. They play at a lot faster pace with Rudy Gobert off the floor.
Oh, of course, yes.
I mean, obviously, you got a freaking Eiffel Tower running down the floor. It slows down the pace. But I'm interested to see if that could end up swinging this series a little bit and playing a little bit more into the Clippers' hands.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so, right? And, you know, DJ can get up and down the court, which is kind of, you know, interesting for a big guy. And, you know, whoever the Jazz are going to put on him, he's going to have a significant body and size advantage.
Jeff Whiddy.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Jeff. What's up, bro? The pride of the Kansas Jayhawks. But, yeah, I think that's going to work out well. But even for the Jazz, I mean, you know, hell, Gobert played, what, one possession? And they still, you know, did that whole game without him. So, playoff Joe Johnson, he's amazing. He had that game winner. Not just saying it because he's a former Net, but, you know, the guy's pretty damn good. Look for Gordon Hayward to probably step up at times in this series, too. I know he's going to have a very tough matchup, but... I wouldn't mind going there at one point.
It's gonna be
just not tonight.
I would rather do it in Utah.
Yes.
Because it's a little bit harder to play. You know, we know how refs in the NBA kind of swing their calls towards the home team like that a little bit. But Luke Richard and Mbamute was all over him. And he was not thrilled about it. That was like Doc Rivers literally mimicked his rotations after Gordon Hayward. And if it wasn't for the fact that Joe Johnson had such a good game, then the Jazz were dead. They were dead to rights until Joe Johnson started playing.
Telling you, they leave Brooklyn and...
they become superstars.
I don't know what gets into these kids or old men. All right, let us have a word from the DFS Army, and we'll be back with some MLB.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today using the coupon code podcast on DFSArmy.com to unlock 20% off your monthly subscription and get 2 free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.
All right, we are back with your MLB DFS breakdown for this one. So, as we mentioned at the top of the show, there are a full slate of 15 games on this one. So we're not going to go over them. We'll pick and choose our spots. Most of the ones that I like are on the East Coast. Any other ones there that are really hitting your mind there, Keith?
Yeah, there's a couple on the West Coast that I want to get to. Mainly that Miami and Seattle game.
Okay.
and the D-backs and Padres game.
All right. All right. Well, we will certainly get to those when we do. But let us begin in the Boogie Down Bronx, where the Chicago White Sox are taking on the New York Yankees. We got Miguel Gonzalez, the righty, going up against Luis Severino, the righty. Gonzalez for the White Sox, Severino for the Yankees. So, I mean, look, Gonzalez has, you know, he's got some average stuff here in his first two starts, 1-0, 4.22 ERA.
You the call whip, what though, he did last time average?
Well, say, well, we're averaging the two, but okay, that whip there, just below two there, so not very good there. Severino, you got to like what these Yankees pitchers are doing. I've mentioned this a bunch of times, but ever since Gary Sanchez went down with an injury, Austin Romine has been calling fantastic games for this team. Severino's last start, albeit against the Tampa Bay Rays, went very well. He did have 11 strikeouts in seven innings, got the win in that one. I was pretty shocked that he actually went seven innings in that one, because Severino was a guy that spent a lot of time in the bullpen last season. We've actually, not even last season, but even the year before that, he hasn't been a full-time starter. So that was very encouraging to see the Yankees staff let him go that long. When we're talking about pitchers in this one, I mean, you got a particular interest in either one?
No.
Oh, my.
I mean, why would I?
Well, what about Severino?
We're talking
cheap.
Oh, my gosh. What is this love with Yankee pitchers?
Have you looked at their numbers lately?
Oh, my God. They are Yankee pitchers.
A 2.42 ERA going into yesterday.
And what is more sustainable? What is more
over their winning streak? They're on an 8-game winning streak. The bats are rolling. Look, I am not a Yankee.
We're talking pitchers. We are talking pitchers.
Okay, but that could still get you an extra 6 points for the win.
I'm not even talking about the win. I'm talking about what is most likely to happen tonight. Okay, Severino to go out and perform the way he did last game against the Chicago White Sox team that is actually hitting the ball not bad, okay, especially against right-handed pitching, or a – let's see, where are the White Sox? Actually, they are hitting bad against right-handed pitching.
Oh,
so, by the way, but anyway, still.
Here's that updated ERA, by the way. 2.77 ERA for the starting pitchers during their 8-game winning streak.
Okay, that's great. That's fantastic. Okay? But the Yankees are not going to go undefeated at home, and they're not going to pitch to a sub-3 ERA at home either.
That's what you think.
I don't know of any team in Major League Baseball history that's ever pitched to a sub-3 ERA at home, especially in a bandbox. Well, I know that hasn't happened.
It's time to break some records.
But especially in a bandbox. I don't have a lot of interest here in the pitchers. I just think for Severino, his ownership, because of what happened last game and from what, you know, Pineda's done and all this, I think it's going to go... it's going to go higher owned than even I would even care to talk about as far as pitchers. He's on a 15-game slate. I can get cheaper pitchers and better matchups. Lower ownership.
I mean, look, with the exception of Avisel Garcia, I mean, I don't – you know, who are you scared about? You know, Jose Abreu, he's on a 2-for-23 stretch. Todd Frazier, he can't hit sand if he falls off a camel. I mean, nobody, you know, what, Tyler Saladino is going to single you to death? I'm not scared of this team right now. And you take a look at the bottom of the White Sox order. They haven't been doing much either. And look, the only way I think I might fade this is if, you know, Higashiyawa is catching for the Yankees. I'm telling you, this whole thing with Austin Romine, I mean, it is no coincidence
that the pitchers
have been
doing
this great since then.
I'm not saying that it's not. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm saying on a 15-game slate with, you know, with his ownership projected to be higher than what I'm ever comfortable with for Luis Severino, in Yankee Stadium, where it's baseball. I don't think I didn't even think twice about crossing him off the list. He's not even in the top 10.
That's just ridiculous. How is that ridiculous? Because he's going to nail it tonight if Romine's behind the plate. To not even have him on the top 10 is just absurd. That's just absurd.
I would rather...
You're being ridiculous now, Keith.
I have no idea what their prices are, okay? No idea what their prices are.
Severino, but... $7,700 on FanDuel. And then I'm looking at Fantasy Draft right now. He's 12.9 over there, but so you know, cut that in half on that's probably what he is on DraftKings.
Okay, I've got Shelby Miller versus the Padres, I've got Kyle Freeland versus the Dodgers, I've got Joe Musgrave versus the Angels. I can go to Yu Darvish, I can go to Andrew Triggs,
not
I can
better
go to...
than Severino. Like, they're different options, like what you know, what you're talking
for
about
for lower ownership that can, yeah, well, that can match percentage. Or outperform.
If they shit the bed, you're going to be one of the only people going down the scoreboard. This is just a good matchup for Severino, and everything's been clicking for this Yankees pitching staff, so I don't know why.
And it's got to come to a stop at some point.
Not
right?
tonight. Not tonight. Wait till Tanaka gets on the mound. Then it could stop then. He's been the only stick in the mud so far for this Yankees staff.
I just...
Well... We're obviously going to disagree there. We've talked enough about that. But with some of the bats in this one, so I'm sure you're going to have some White Sox interest going
against
Severino.
I don't have White Sox interest in it either. I mean, maybe as a one-off of Jose Abreu because he can put the ball out of the yard, or a Todd Frazier as one-offs. I don't have any – I'm not stacking against him. I just don't have any interest in playing him. I have more interest in, like, Yankee bats versus Miguel Gonzalez.
Right. Well, let's talk about those because this is going to be, you know.
I have insulted you. Here. I can hear it in your voice.
No, you haven't insulted. It's okay to disagree. That's what makes the podcast good. But with the Yankees offense, we've got the – you cannot hear shit in my voice. All right? I hide everything very well. Okay, you got Brett Gardner, who's 9-for-29 against Gonzalez. Jacoby Ellsbury, 9-for-26, and then you know we've also got Chase Headley. He's got terrible numbers against Gonzalez, 0-for-11, 5 Ks.
But he's on fire.
He is on fire. Well, let's talk about Gardner and Ellsbury at the top. That should get everything started, okay? And then we're probably gonna have Starlin Castro batting cleanup or somewhere around there. He's third in the AL in batting average. We got Chase Headley, who's got those shitty numbers. He's second in the AL in batting average. He's been on base 19 times in his last 37 appearances. Oh, that's amazing. So between Avisel Garcia on the White Sox side and Chase Headley and Starlin Castro, we have the top three batting averages in the American League, which is interesting. But then you add in Brett Gardner, Jacoby Ellsbury at the top of the Yankees lineup. This should be a nice, easy win for the Yanks once again.
Okay.
Yeah.
I honestly, they go in this order for me. It goes, Well, I mean, you don't know if both Gardner and Ellsbury are going to be in the lineup because it's been Gardner leading off and Aaron Hicks batting second lately.
They've faced an inordinate amount of lefties at some point, so I don't know. They've got a weird, like Girardi does weird things, but if he's smart, that Yankees lineup is never the same, so... All right, our next one here, we got the Boston Red Sox at the Toronto Blue Jays. Brian Johnson, who's only made one start in his MLB career. That one start was also his only appearance. He's going up against Marcus Stroman of the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, I had a quote. I posted this in the Slack chat yesterday, but I want to make this clear because this is my feelings on the Red Sox and, well, actually the Blue Jays offense. So this about Brian Johnson, tonight's starter. He's been hit in the head with a line drive twice in 5 years, held up at gunpoint in his home state, and endured time away from baseball to deal with overwhelming anxiety. If the Blue Jays can't get to this guy, I don't know what is gonna happen for the rest of their season. I believe the Blue Jays are 2-10 right now, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct.
And the news actually doesn't get any better for them as they've announced just moments ago, Josh Donaldson, he's going to be out
for 2 to 4 weeks with that nagging calf injury that's been going on with him. So huge blow there, but you know, with all the righty bats they got, they have, they got to get to this kid tonight.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it. A lot of people are going to be jumping off, and I've heard a lot of talk about Brian Johnson being a sneaky GPP play already today because of how bad the Blue Jays are struggling, and I'm shaking my head going, do these guys watch baseball at all? You're allowed to have a bad stretch, and I understand this, but my God. Okay, maybe I'm not rushing to play Jose Bautista, but Kendrys Morales, Troy Tulowitzki, Kevin Pillar, I mean, I'm probably going to have one or two Blue Jay stacks tonight, and I hope that Brian Johnson ends up being chalk because he's going to leave the Rogers Center holding his Johnson.
Hey, family show.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Mean, look, I've been trying to be on that that Jose Bautista bandwagon more than probably anybody this MLB season, and you know, before anybody else, and it has certainly not worked out. I mean, Russell Martin's another guy that I've trying to been on, and you know, he's batting 097. There's just a
hey,
lot.
Hey, it's come up.
What?
His batting average.
there's just so much disappointment with this Blue Jays team right now, and I mean, look, it's a good matchup for them. And I like everything messed up with that kid, you know, Brian Johnson there. Again, if there's gonna be a good spot, this could be it. And again, they have plenty of right-handed bats to take advantage of. And I kind of mentioned this last year, but I don't necessarily think that the Rogers Center is the hitter's haven that we kind of first remember it as.
I don't think it is either, but I think it will become that as it warms up. Part of what made it a hitter's haven was the turf, and they replaced that before last year, if you remember. And they were talking about how it was slowing things down. I have no problems with throwing out a Blue Jay stack there as long as you're smart with it. Definitely not my favoritist in the world, but you know, it is one that I think is definitely going to be underowned, if not owned. And that is something I'm willing to go back to. I mean, look, these guys are just too good of hitters to be like this all year round. And, you know, we've already invested money into it. I mean,
KCP all over again?
Yeah, it's going to be that time that you're not on them, and that you're just, you know, one of these times they're going to explode. And if you don't have them, and I'm not just talking about explode for like 5 runs, I'm talking about explode for like 12. And I mean, if you don't have them, then you're not going to win. And it's going to be the time that we least expect it. There used to be a time that we would just load up on them. Now I think we need to be smart with it. They're not the blind stack that they used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about Marcus Stroman in this one because he's actually been pretty good at the Rogers Center. We're taking a look at his splits from 2014 to 2016 at home. 13-5 with a 3.49 ERA, 79 earned runs, 12 homers allowed in 203 2/3 innings. On the road, the ERA nearly a run higher. It was 11-11 there. Gave up 78 earned runs, 18 homers in 258 innings. I think I actually had the innings backwards, so screw me on that one, right? But you get the point. He's been much better there. Not sure I want to attack him against this Red Sox team. Or not sure I want to use him against this Red Sox team. But is there any inkling of interest there that he can get this done?
Yeah, it's Marcus Stroman in the Rogers Center. There's always an inkling. Say what you want. The Blue Jays haven't been hitting. But it's not like they haven't been, you know, besides the disaster that was J.A. Happ the other day. And you know, they've still been, you know, they haven't been getting blown out. Like the back end of their bullpen is shaky, but I mean, we got to talk about it. This is a guy that, you know, the last game he goes out and he throws a freaking 9-inning complete game. Made a couple mistakes and allowed 2 earned runs and took the loss. Like, I don't care who you are. If you throw 9 innings and allow 2 runs, you should not take a loss. I have no problems going back to Stroman. He's more of a FanDuel play, in my opinion, than a DraftKings play.
Okay.
Just because of the fact that he does, you know, he is a ground ball pitcher. Yeah, he can strike out a lot of guys, but that's not typically his game. And when you allow a lot of contact, contact finds green grass, and you get deducted on DraftKings for walks and for hits and stuff. So I don't think I'm going to go there.
All right. There are a couple interesting BVP notes from the Red Sox. Bogarts, Holt, Pedroia, all hitting over 300 against Stroman over their careers. But Mookie Betts, 4-for-16, 5 strikeouts. Jackie Bradley Jr., 1-for-13, 4 Ks. Is Bradley still out, or is he back in?
He was not in the game yesterday, as far as I remember.
All right. He might still be out, but regardless, you don't want to use let's see. Oh, he said he can return on Friday, so no, he's not back. All right. Let us talk about one of my favorite matchups for hitters on the entire slate. We got the Baltimore Orioles at the Cincinnati Reds. Ubaldo Jimenez, the righty, going up against Bronson Arroyo, the righty. Jimenez not off to a great start this season. 10.38 ERA, 2.08 WHIP. You know, so far here in 2017.
It's come down.
Yeah, Bronson Arroyo not doing much better. He's 0-2 with the 9.90 ERA. So here's the big matchup here. Okay, Bronson Arroyo has been absolutely terrible against right-handed pitching, or I'm sorry, against right-handed bats for pretty much his entire career. If we want to look at his numbers from 2014 to 2016, right-handed bats hit for 98 points higher than left-handed batters did, which is absolutely mind-boggling. But when we talk about this Orioles offense, you know, we never really like to play them when they're going up against left-handed pitching. Righties, they're okay. So the fact that we have these enormous splits here where Roy was so bad against righties, and we know that the Orioles have all the right-handed bats in the world, you know, especially now that we're in Great American Ballpark, the great – a.k.a. the Great American Homer Park, it might be chalk, but it's still my favorite stack of the day.
Yeah, it's going to be chalk. I feel like this is one of those games where you can kind of just stack it up and get creative with it. I have a lot of interest, even though, you know, we talk about, you know, Bronson Arroyo having, you know, really big reverse splits. This is a guy that's, look, we're talking about his third start in over a year. And he's over 40, and his stuff did not get better being over 40. So I still don't mind going with a Manny Machado here, or sorry, a Chris Davis. I mean, you could even go with a Adam Jones.
Who?
Adam Jones.
Jones.
Did
you not get the Mike Jones reference? My God.
No, I didn't.
I thought I did that last week and it worked. Anywho, that must have been the other podcast that I do.
Yeah, it must have been. So, you know, I mean, it's just, it kind of just depends on exactly what lineup that, you know, the Orioles throw out there. Would love to play Wellington Castillo, but he seems to be colder than a freaking icicle. What's that?
Than a witch's titty?
Yeah, that too.
Okay. Mark Trumbo might be a guy here. We know he's got all the pop in the world. He has struggled against lefties before, but righties, yeah, I got no issue with that right there. He is batting 205. The only homer that he had this year was the opening day walk-off, but I got faith in you, Trumbo. I've got faith. When we talk about the Reds here, they're going against Kevin Gausman.
No, they're not.
No, who are they going up against?
Baldo Jimenez, you already said that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What the hell am I talking about? I saw Gausman on some number. All right, never mind. Dismiss what I said. But again, Baldo Jimenez, and he's been pretty bad. Home, road, Earth, Jupiter, Pluto, wherever it is. So, you know, the Reds kind of got cooled down just a tad when the Brewers came to town. But, you know, before that, they were slugging the ball with the best of them. So, you know, again, Billy Hamilton, Javada, all these folks that the Reds got. Those are one of the leading batting average guys in the NL right now. So, you know, you can take a look at a lot of different options over there as well.
Yeah.
Scott Schebler. Ooh.
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 Yeah, I like.
Too bad I don't have to spend up on pitching tonight.
No kidding. I like Votto and Duvall. I like Cozart as well. Jose Peraza is interesting if you were kind of hunting for stolen bases. Sure. I would probably do that on FanDuel only. He's only 3,100 over there compared to the 37 on DraftKings, so.
All right, I like it. I just want to glance over this one briefly. Not a matchup that I really want to get too in-depth into, but the Detroit Tigers at the Tampa Bay Rays. Michael Fulmer, the righty, going for the Tigers. Matt Andrees, the righty for the Rays. Now, Michael Fulmer, he's had an amazing start to the season. He's 1-0, 2.25 ERA, 0.92 whip, 11 strikeouts in 12 innings. Okay, that's great. He's got fantastic numbers against the Rays, you know, in short term, 2-0, 0.64 ERA, 21 strikeouts in 14 innings. Everything is going great so far. Got the good numbers and the small sample size of the BVP against the Rays hitters. Everything looking good, but Vegas, they not liking it so much. They've actually got the Rays as a -120 favorite in this game, and the total there at 7.5. I'm wondering, what do they see that I'm not seeing here in the stats?
I have no idea. Because I'm thinking the same way you are. It's just does not feel like this is a game that is, like, I'm not overly impressed by Andrees. You know, the only thing that I can think of is that, you know, the Tigers aren't hitting great. But with that said, you still got guys like, you know, Nick Castellanos and Ian Kinsler. And, I mean, I know they have Miggy and V-Mart, but those guys aren't hitting right now. But the rest of these guys are. I don't see why this game is like that. I mean, I'm still willing. Tyler Collins is interesting value. You know, as a one-off, being 2,500 there on DK and FanDuel both. Victor Martinez is 2,600 on FanDuel. I guess you could take a chance with him.
Okay.
But I mean, other than one-offs, I'm not really interested in stacking up this game or either one of these teams. I've got some interest in some Rays.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
But not – I don't – there aren't a ton of interesting stacks tonight. Most of them are just one-offs. Except for, you know, like the stacks I do have and I do have interest in, like, they're not. Maybe I'm off the way beaten path, but they're not on anybody that I've heard anybody talk about.
Yeah.
You know, other than the Reds and the Orioles, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we just have 15 games, so there is a ton to choose from. Again, you know, with this thing, and remember, we heard this from a couple of pitchers last season that they absolutely love that mound at Tropicana Field. Like, this is a place where pitchers really feel comfortable, you know, not necessarily a hitter's park. Maybe even some of those long fly balls get knocked down by the catwalk up there. as well. But yeah, it's pretty weird to see that from Vegas, not really liking Fulmer here tonight against the Rays. So definitely keep that in mind, folks. All right, let's talk about another one. We'll talk briefly about the Phils at the Mets here. Zach Wheeler for the Mets, Zach Eflin, both righties in this one, but Zach Eflin for the Phillies, also a righty. Zach versus Zach, how you like that? Again, not really liking too much, but Wheeler did have a pretty decent outing against the Phils last week. He went 5 2/3, gave up 4 hits, walk. 3 earned runs. That was in his last inning of work, and he gave up 4 strikeouts in 80, or he had 4 strikeouts in 85 pitches. Actually, now that I remember it, those 3 earned runs, he left the game with the bases loaded, not giving up a run, and then Mikel Franco,
yeah,
he hit the grand slam there.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So all 3 charged to Wheeler in that one. So he's an interesting case because he was playing the Phillies, and there's really not much. Yeah, not much history to go off of with this since, you know, Wheeler pitched back in the day but then got hurt when most of these Phillies were coming up. Cesar Hernandez is 3-5 against Wheeler. That's really it. But, you know, the Mets aren't, you know, Wheeler's coming off just, you know, 2 years of brutal injury recovery. You know, they're not going to let him loose on pitches tonight. He's gone 80 and 85 in his first 2 starts. I mean, the kid's got ridiculous velocity, and he is a good pitcher. Just don't know if we're necessarily getting the most bang for our buck here.
Yeah, I'm not going with Wheeler until they allow him to actually pitch deeper into ball games. And I'm not talking like per an innings standpoint. Right. I'm talking about like a pitch count. I've got to see him starting to approach that 95 to 100 pitches in order for me to actually go to him. Until that happens, I'm out on him. So, it's not like I'm going to target against him, because the back end of that Mets bullpen is actually not bad at all. But I'm definitely not going to be playing him in any of my tournaments tonight.
Yeah, and I really don't like the fact that the Mets dropped 3 straight against the Marlins, because now they're going to be looking to kick some ass against my boys and take it out on them, who they've just taken it out on forever. So. Yay. At least we're not playing at Citizens Bank Park in this one. That's the good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Yeah, really not much to get to that game. Curtis Granderson has homered off Eflin, but not much BVP history against him there. Although, if you want to take a look at Eflin, left-handed bats did way more damage against him in his first season of Major League work last year. So, you know, you could go with Jay Bruce, Asdrubal Cabrera, Curtis Granderson, of course, Michael Conforto. So, all those guys would work out well. All right, let's talk about a very interesting matchup here. We've got the Washington Nationals at the Atlanta Braves. The Braves just completed the 4-game sweep in their new ballpark, SunTrust Park, against the Padres, but they do face a much more formidable foe here, especially on the mound, where the Nats are throwing Max Scherzer, the dominant righty, up against Mike Foltynewicz, the shitty righty. So Scherzer's already in midseason form, 17 strikeouts in 12 2/3 innings. He is 1-1 with a 2.13 ERA. Not the greatest numbers against Atlanta. If you remember, they got to him a couple times last season. He is 4-1, though, with a 3.46 ERA against him in his last 6 starts, 16 earned runs, and 41 strikeouts in 41 2/3 innings. Look, we've seen the Braves hitting pretty well here at the new park, and they do have a decent history against Scherzer. You got a fade Scherzer campaign going here.
Not a fade Scherzer campaign. Scherzer's the best starting pitcher on the night. I'm not fading him, but it's not like I'm completely avoiding having guys against him either. Sure. You know, he does allow a home run. I'm trying to look here and see exactly He does have some history in allowing home runs.
Up like 30 last season?
Yeah. Now, most of them are solo shots, don't get me wrong. But he does allow the home run, and it looks like he has not allowed one this year. That's...
Yes, you're correct. Yeah, not this season.
Okay, well, he's last due. I know people hate that. He's due. I'm going to have... I'm going to have some Scherzer, and I'm going to have some guys against Scherzer. I just don't know who yet. Probably, let's look at the old BVP tool here.
For sure.
And see what we can, because there are some guys. Oh!
Oh, against Scherzer we're talking about here? I'm sorry, I zoned out for a second looking at some numbers. But yeah, there are two. There are actually a couple.
Tyler Flowers has got him. Kurt Suzuki's got him. Freddie Freeman's got him, although I probably wouldn't go there. The guys I probably would... Jesus, Ender Inciarte. He's just on fire right now.
Yep. By the way, Inciarte has posted some massive fantasy point totals in three of his last five games.
Well, of course he has. He's hit more homers this year than he has his entire career combined.
Let me break this down real quick. For Inciarte, 9 for his last 19, 4 homers, 6 RBIs, 7 runs, 2 walks in these last 5 games. And then I know you mentioned Freddie Freeman, but he, you know, when we're looking at his numbers, like, you're going to see, you know, over the last 7 games, blah, 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 he did this. But 2 of those games, he went for 50-plus FanDuel points. So keep that in mind, including a double dong last night.
Yeah.
Did you want to get into some numbers real quick, or?
I can't find any that I like. I mean, Nick Markakis maybe. He's 10 for 36. Ender Inciarte and Tyler Flowers, but I mean, somebody's gonna get him tonight. I just don't know who, and I've got to look deeper into the numbers. So.
All right. I don't mind Nick Markakis. Yeah, I believe he got his 10-game hit streak broken last night, of course, because I put it in my notes. But
and I had him in a lineup.
I had him in a game against Scherzer last year. I believe he got like 15 FanDuel points. I got to see what his price is. If it's really cheap, I might think about going with him because he's been batting cleanup lately right behind Freddie Freeman. So he's been certainly getting some good spots to hit in. If we're talking about Foltynewicz, he actually did pretty well against Washington last two times out. 1-0, 3.86 ERA, 11 strikeouts in 11 and two-thirds innings. But again, you got to deal with this hectic Nationals lineup. Daniel Murphy is really the only guy with any significant BVP against Foltynewicz. 4 for 7 with 2 doubles against him. I mean, Bryce Harper's finally hitting the ball very well with consistency here. He had that double dong against Philly the other day. So, you know, you don't want to avoid Foltynewicz, but, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he held the Nationals to a respectable run total. Isn't that weird? I have it in the notes too with Fulton. Like, you never get mediocre with him, right? You either get really good or really bad.
Yeah.
Like, there's never been an average Foltynewicz start. It's either, oh God, get this guy out in the second inning, or yeah, or he like goes for 7 and he strikes out 8 somehow.
Yep.
All right. Any closing thoughts on this one?
No, not on this one. This is just this is one I've still got to look a little bit deeper into.
All right, fair enough. Let's take a look. We got the Milwaukee Brewers at the Chicago Cubs. Jimmy Nelson, the righty for the Brewers. Brett Anderson, the lefty for the Cubs. Now, this is another one that I don't really want to get too much into, but Nelson had a very good start against the Cubs in his 2017 debut. He goes 6, gives up 4 hits, no walks, an earned run, 8 strikeouts in that one, and he does get the win. So here's a weird thing, right? So Nelson has pretty good BVP numbers against a lot of this Cubs roster, but in his last 10 starts against the Cubs, he's 1-6, 3.92 ERA, giving up 30 earned runs and 8 home runs in 52 and a third innings, opposing batting average of .288. So all these numbers must have happened, like, you know, a long time ago, right?
No, I think a lot of the earned runs, and I think they got to him all in like 2 or 3 starts. And I remember Jimmy Nelson had, like, I think it was in Miller Park last summer, had just absolutely shut him down. I remember because I had the Cubs stacked 6 ways from Sunday, so that was definitely a very bad day. Yeah, I have had some success just not playing a lot of Cubs, and they haven't been going off. They always seem to be chalky unless there's weather involved. And other than one-offs maybe of a Bryant or a Rizzo, even a Zobrist, because I just don't play Kyle Schwarber. I just don't have a lot of interest. Maybe some Addison Russell, depending on how some of the numbers line up when I run my heat maps a little bit later. But it's not that I think Jimmy Nelson's a great pitcher. I just don't think that the Cubs are clicking right now. And if I'm going to fade them, I need to fade them early on. That way I can play them when everybody gets off of them. That's kind of what I'm hoping happens. I don't know how much it's gonna actually work, though.
It'll be interesting to see if we see Marcus Thames in the lineup tonight, since we got the lefty-lefty
you
matchup.
You mean Eric Thames?
Did I say Marcus?
Yes, you did.
There was a Marcus Thames, right?
I have no idea.
There's Timms or something like that. I don't know, but
I think
yeah,
it was Marcus Timms.
That guy too. Yeah, he's pretty good. Was that homers in 5 straight games now?
Yeah, and have you seen what he's done against left-handed bats?
I have not.
Let me just give you. Let me just let you know what his DFSA grade is today. 157.08.
Oh my!
He's got 1,000 ISO. Like, if it wasn't for the fact that we knew that it was only 6 at bats versus left-handed pitching, we would be looking at this being going like, God, this is the best baseball player in the world. And just to throw this out there, I still don't think that Eric Thames is a good baseball player. I'm going.
You called him a joke in the opening day podcast.
I did call him a joke. I am backing off of the joke, and now he is just a giggle. And I'm on a wait and see approach. Am I going to be shocked if he comes back down to earth, or when he comes back down to earth, if he comes like crashing down like really, really, really hard? No, I'm not going to be shocked about that at all.
Yeah, because people, yeah, I mean, look, people will come around and learn how to pitch him, and yeah, absolutely, it always happens. There's 162 games, goddammit.
There's not really a book out on him yet.
They need to talk to their Korean counterparts, and
they couldn't get him out either. There's a freaking MVP over there.
Statues.
I don't know. Right. So,
also, too, with 3 homers last night, your Milwaukee Brewers, the stolen base kings of Major League Baseball, lead MLB in homers now with 25. Very interesting.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Especially, oh my God, how did I miss the John Lackey train yesterday? Oh,
yeah.
I just glossed over that so hard.
It's okay. It is okay. All right, another quick one for us to take a look at. We've got the Los Angeles Angels here at the Houston Astros. It is the Angels of Los Angeles, if I'm not mistaken.
Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
Orange County.
By the way, I got to bring this up. So in hockey, the Anaheim Ducks are playing the Calgary Flames. Do you know they are 29-0 against the Flames in Anaheim the last 29 games? Mind-boggling. Anywho, that only had to do with Anaheim, not MLB DFS. But so the Astros are going to have Joe Musgrove in this one, Angels, Ricky Nolasco. Nolasco is a guy we could certainly target in this one. However, he only had one start against the Astros last season. Went pretty well. He went 7 innings, 5-hit shutout with 5 strikeouts. Angels really haven't seen much of Musgrove, but Musgrove was very good at home. In 6 appearances last season, 5 starts, he was 3-1 with a 1.75 ERA, 37 strikeouts and 36 innings. Let's see the numbers here. I mean, you know, Nolasco isn't off to a great start this season, but there's really not a lot of numbers to go off here. So it's going to be a lot of feels on this one. So what are you feeling on here?
Mike Trout.
Okay.
And I actually like, see, here's, I don't think Carlos Correa is going to be in the lineup. So I think Alex Bregman is going to be moved over to short. I think, Marwin Gonzalez is going to be in the lineup. I know that's not what the projected lineup says, people. I know, but
we know,
you know, that's what I'm feeling it's going to be. Josh Reddick is interesting. Jose Altuve is always chalk. I mean, the Astros are going to be extremely chalky tonight because it is Ricky Nolasco, and a lot of people like to kind of, you know, pick on him. So
punch him in the face.
Oh man, yeah, it's going to be. It's very, very odd. So,
yeah, again, like we do have some BVP against Nolasco, but I don't. These are going back to like black and white TV days where you have Brian McCann, who has a 358 average against him in 68 at bat, 8 homers in that span, which is great. You got Beltran with a 353 average against him in 51 at bats. He's only got 1 homer, 11 strikeouts. Norichika Aoki, one of my favorite.
Norichika.
I remember we were talking about him on the opening day pod. I had him on Saturday. He went bananas. So good for you, Aoki. He's 5-for-24. Not great numbers against Nolasco, but he's a guy. Yeah, I don't know if you guys remember opening day podcast. We talked. If you want to do an Astros stack, you can get real creative because they've put a lot of their on base percentage guys kind of at the bottom of the order. And that kind of works out very well for, you know, when it swings around to the guys like Springer and Bregman, Altuve, Correa. So I will always have some interest in those fellas.
Yeah. I don't mind the little wraparound stack if you want to go there. Springer's not been hitting the ball well right now, and he does not have a good DFS A grade. Been making some money fading him, and on a 15-game slate, I don't think I'm going to start now.
Yep. One interesting thing for Musgrove is, you know, I was just looking at the preview for this game, and it's kind of funny when you look at the Angels outfield, right? So, no, that wasn't a Tony Danza reference, but you've got Mike Trout, Cole Calhoun, Ben Revere, Cameron Mabrin, and then at first base, you know, you're going to have, you know, Albert Pujols and CJ Cron. All of these guys are, you know, fighting for playing time. And for space out there. So, you know, most likely on some night you're going to have two of these guys just not playing. And I don't know. I would wonder if we might see a trade in the works for this Angels team soon. Not that that has anything to do with DFS, but
it's just been Pujols and Crone almost all year at the first base spot because Pujols is your DH.
Yeah.
Except for when they sat him out the other night. Then you know, you've got Crone in their DH and you could put you know, whoever.
I mean, it might make sense, right? Because we're talking about this Angels team. I believe, what, 5? They only scored, I think, 3 runs in total in Kansas City over the weekend. And then they get shut out against.
They were in Kansas City over the weekend?
They were.
I forgot. They were in Oakland.
The Angels. The Angels I'm talking about here.
I know. They were in Oakland.
No, the Angels were in Kansas City.
I know this for a fact. I didn't even remember. I didn't even think. I was sick all weekend. That's why.
The Astros were in Oakland. No. Yeah, so they scored 3 runs there, and then, you know, they put up the donut last night. So you gotta think that, you know, just a lot of these hitters not having the consistency that they're probably used to over the course of their major league careers kind of taking a toll on them, you know, just not being able to get into a groove.
Okay, guys, when I play with the BVP tab, since I play in the master on the master one here, if you guys can't see somebody else, remind me, because I forget to do that all the time because I'll sort. I just had a guy because we were looking at Max Scherzer's BVP and a guy just DM'd me. Guys, please, I forget that what I see is more than what you guys can see, but you guys can only see when I sort things. Please remind me. I know that came out of nowhere. That's how much I feel about the Angels, and that's how much I feel about the Angels. it's Mike Trout, dude, right now. It's Mike Trout. Nobody else is even crossing my radar right now.
That's all right. That's okay. All right, let's get it deep into this one because this should be a good game for sticks here with the Cleveland Indians at the Minnesota Twins. Twins are throwing what is going on here with my Word document? They're throwing out Josh Tomlin here, the righty, and the Twins are throwing out Phil Hughes, the righty. Tomlin, 3-1, 3.86 ERA, last 8 appearances, 6 starts versus the Twins. However, very, very bad here in his beginning of 2017. So he's made it a combined 6 innings, giving up 15 hits, 13 earned runs. It's just been an absolute disaster. That last start that he had there, I believe it was against the White Sox, he goes an inning and 2/3, 8 hits, 7 earned runs, giving up 2 homers. It's been a disaster for the man. If we look on the other side of things, though, Phil Hughes has actually been pretty decent. 2-0, 3.86 ERA, 1.11 whip, play the lottery kid. And, I think I can speak for both of us when we say we're not going with the pitchers.
Yeah, no.
All right, great. No need for breakdown. We got 15 games, folks. So, reverse splits for both pitchers here. Right-handed bats been hitting Hughes a lot better from 2014 to 2016. And then if we look at the splits against Tomlin from 2014 to 2016, let's take a look at it. So right-handed bats, I'm just gonna go, you know, righty to lefty in these stats, okay? So right-handed bats, 38 homers to 29. Right-handed bats, 293 average to 222 for the lefties. Right-handed bats, 322 on-base percentage, 239 on-base percentage for the lefties. Slugging percentage, 523 for the righties, 412 for the lefties. OPS, 845 for the righties, 651 for the lefties. So I think you got the point there in saying that right-handed bats are a fantastic idea against Mr. Tomlin this evening. And boy, do the Twins have plenty of them.
Yeah. just stack it up. Like, this game was a disappointment last night as far as a game stack. I'm going right back to the well.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I'm going right back to the well.
All right. So. You got a couple BVP numbers. I'll have them on the notes. Keith will have them on his chart there, but... the good ones for the Indians, you're looking at Edwin Encarnacion, who can't hit water falling off jet skis nowadays, Austin Jackson, and Yan Gomes, who is on that same jet ski as Encarnacion. And then for the Twins, Dozier, you know, has made good contact against Tomlin, not necessarily had many hits, but, and then Miguel Sano and Joe Mauer also have good numbers against him as well.
Yeah. Don't play Joe Mauer.
Don't play Jonah. He's on the same tri-jet ski as all those Encarnacion and Gomes as well. Okay, another one we could probably briefly glance over, a rematch of the 2014 World Series with the Giants at the Royals. Matt Cain going for the Giants, the righty, up against Jason Hamill, the righty for the Royals. I don't really have too much interest here, but I'm kind of intrigued by some of these Royals lefties where you got Alex Gordon, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, guys like that. I don't know how deep the burn still is from that 2014 World Series, but I don't know. You got some decent narrative there.
Yeah, it's Moustakas, Hosmer, maybe even Salvi. But mostly it's Moustakas and Hosmer for me.
Okay. Any Giants interest here?
Brandon Belt looks like he's starting to kind of hit the ball a little bit better. I know it didn't show well in that Colorado series, but still. Maybe even Brandon Crawford. We talk about Isaiah Thomas losing his sister, but Brandon Crawford, his wife's sister, was lost over the weekend as well. So,
oh, no.
And then maybe as a value play, some Joe Panic.
Okay.
Pay attention to see if Nick Hundley or if Buster Posey's back in that lineup today. He was eligible to come off the DL yesterday, so there might be a roster move.
Okay. What am I looking at here? So if Crawford is Crawford gonna play or no? You said
he didn't start. I believe it was Sunday. This is about the only baseball I watched this weekend. It was either Saturday or Sunday. He did not start, but he pinch hit late in the game. I think that was Sunday. So I haven't heard anything, but that is something to keep an eye out for.
All right, let's take a look, another quick look here. We got the Pittsburgh Pirates at the St. Louis Cardinals. Chad Kuhl, the righty, going for the Pirates. Mike Leake, the righty, going for the Cardinals. Mike Leake could be an interesting SP2 tonight. Any interest there?
Yep.
Okay.
And I have interest in the Pirates as well. I don't hedge often, but when I do it with the Pirates, damn it. Oops.
Okay.
I just broke something.
That's okay. You can replace it.
Oh, I'm Mr. Moneybags over here.
What do we got here?
But yes, I do have a little bit of interest in Mike Leake. He is a sneaky GPP play. The problem I have is I think it's more of a FanDuel play.
Okay.
And then I would probably stack against him on DraftKings. But the issue I have is the Cardinals offense is just – then again, they pulled it out last night. Freaking Evan Nova pitched a gem, and Lance Lynn matched him, and that was very, very odd to see, considering how the Pirates kind of pwn Lance Lynn. So that was interesting, but I've got a little bit of interest, but I'm not jumping at the thrill to play a lot of guys like Andrew McCutchen.
Uh-huh. By the way, I mentioned this on Slack chat yesterday. I'm so glad he was able to resurrect his numbers in the 80-mile-an-hour winds of Wrigley over the weekend. Don't be fooled by all that.
Oh, my gosh. That was...
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
Hey, by the way, updating something that I said earlier, so if you guys are at this point in the podcast, you're probably going to know by now, but it actually is Kevin Gausman going for the Orioles tonight up against the Cincinnati Reds, so keep that in mind.
That's not what Vegas has.
Even on ESPN, I've got Gausman.
I see. I had Gausman last night, and then I opened up Pinnacle this morning, and they had Ubaldo.
Who is pitching? Anywho, I would think... So wait, so Gausman was – I had – so that's weird. So you had Gausman last night. I had Ubaldo last night, and now we're switched. All right.
Hold on. I'm looking. Nope. Okay, they switched it. It is Kevin Gausman.
It is Gausman. All right. So I was going to say – and I used this narrative yesterday in my notes for Charlie Morton yesterday. Now, it was supposed to be – I forget who was initially supposed to start. It might have been Musgrove, who was supposed to start for the Astros. And I used a little bit of outside-the-box thinking and saying that, hey, you know, maybe the Astros or the Angels necessarily weren't prepared in their scouting report to face Morton. They were more thinking towards Musgrove. Any thought to that?
No,
I mean, Morton did pitch five shutout innings. He did give up a lot of hits, though. So
and he walked. Did, but you know, at 1.2% owned, I'll take it.
Yeah, hey, I had it too. High five. Psh, okay.
There we go.
All right, we only got a couple more to skim through. Texas Rangers, Oakland A's. This wasn't one of your big ones, right?
No, because it's in Oakland.
All right, fair enough.
Although I do like Stephen Vaught as a nice value option for a catcher.
Okay. Yu Darvish on the mound for the Rangers. Any interest there?
Yeah, a little bit. Not a ton, but a little bit.
He will cost you a pretty penny.
Yeah, he will. So I like him as your – if you're going to pivot from Scherzer – This is the guy you do it with.
Interesting. Okay. All right, so nothing else in that game?
Maybe Nomar Mazara.
All right. Nomar.
I mean, obviously you can throw in Chu, Luke Roy, and Rogi over there. I don't know. This might be an interesting stack. But maybe just some mini stacks. Maybe like a Mazara and a Odor, or then a Odor and a Lucroy, or a Lucroy and a Chu. You know, get a couple guys that can hit the gaps or go dong on you, and then, you know, just as a little mini stack.
A few A's have bad BVP against Darvish. Yonder Alonso, 1-14, 4 strikeouts. Matt Joyce, 1-13, 6 strikeouts. Your boy, Stephen Vogt, got 6-22, 3 RBIs, but also 6 strikeouts. All right, let us talk about the next game on the docket. We've got the Miami Marlins, Wei-Yin Chen, going up against Giovanni Gallardo. I'm really not too interested in the pitching in this one. I'm never going to be interested when Wei-Yin Chen is on the mound. He used to have decent stuff, but the guy just gives up way too many homer balls. So if we're talking about homer balls and a left-handed pitcher, we got to be talking about Nelson Cruz for the Seattle Mariners. The guy's numbers against lefties rival that of Ryan Braun. Same against southpaws. The numbers are just fantastic. The one advantage here, though, that I could see for Giovanni Gallardo, it ended up working out pretty well for Ariel Miranda last night, where, you know, Florida had to travel all the way across the country. It's actually the furthest trip in all of baseball, which I kind of let slip my grasp last night going with Giancarlo Stanton and Marcelo Zuna.
Who was right about that one, by the way?
You were, but you just went – you were trying to avoid ownership percentage. You didn't give me any of these behind-the-scenes answers, you bastard. I could have helped.
You didn't ask.
Oh, I don't know. We're on a basis where we just give, okay? we're on that level right now. But maybe – I don't know. Do you see the same travel sort of thing working out for Giovanni Gallardo again, or is he just so shitty it doesn't matter?
No, I see Gallardo. I don't want to say getting pounded, but I see Gallardo not having a good night.
Okay, so no quality start for Giovanni.
No.
That's basically how we're judging all pitchers now.
On FanDuel, you kind of have to.
Well, I mean, in real life, yeah, we were doing that. But, yeah, especially on FanDuel, yeah. Why not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Gallardo's got some really shitty numbers. I'll have them in the notes section. But, hey, Mariners pitching's been pretty good lately. You know, we had Miranda last night. You had Felix and Paxton go back-to-back gems against the Rangers there over the weekend. So, I don't know. Maybe something in the sauce there.
No, I don't think it is.
Okay.
You know, I think the Mariners are a good team. You know, I don't say that he's going to – I don't predict Gallardo's going to allow, like, 12 runs.
That would be epic.
That would be epic. Or even – but, I mean, he's 4 or 5 maybe. Yeah. This bullpen's pretty well rested right now. They were talking about it on the broadcast last night, you know, with Paxton doing what he did, and then, Ariel doing what she did last night, and,
that crab though.
Oh, wow. I just realized what I just said. Sorry, we've got Disney Channel going now that KD has joined us. You know, it's just one of those things, like, this bullpen's well-rested. I don't think that they're going to sit there. To me, if I'm Scott Servais, you've got King Felix going. You know he can go deep into ball games later in the series. I'm not, depending on what their schedule is, I'm not worried about blowing my bullpen in the fourth inning tonight. I can go out there and, you know, and if it gets out of hand and my offense isn't getting to whoever is thrown for the
Marlins.
Yeah, I'm trying to
Chen.
Chen. Oh my God. If my offense can't get to Chen for some reason, and this is like a game where I just have to punt, then I've got a long guy out there that can throw 2-3 innings. Hopefully, you know, not get shelled around, and you know, I can keep my guys in neutral to positive situations. I mean, they didn't have to. Ariel threw, what, 7, 8 innings last night?
Around that area.
So, I mean, he's got – they are well rested in the bullpen. And, I don't see them sticking with – Gallardo long enough to get shelled. Get shelled.
And, you know, again, too, mentioning with all the Mariners' great pitching, you know, they haven't really needed their bullpen much over the last couple days. Sunday, they were used a bit, but that's really it. So that is good, too. All right, so we're talking about Chen, right? And look, lefties against Nelson Cruz, the boomstick, Nelly Go Boom, whatever you want to call him, should be a given, right?
Yeah, should be a given. If you did not, I can't remember what rank he was yesterday, but he was ranked. He was on Boomer's Bombers. Taylor Motter almost went double dong last night.
Almost.
If it wasn't for a good play by Ichiro out there in left field, he would have not only gone dong, which he did. But he would have probably had a double or even possibly more. Look, people don't like to stack West Coast teams because, you know, of the Marine layer and all that. I love it. It worked out phenomenal for me last night.
Sure. So, now let me ask you something. So Cruz homers last night. We know we got him again against the lefty. Ownership percentage probably going to be through the roof. Worth a fade.
I don't think it's going to be through the roof with 15 games. It's going to be higher. It's not going to be 12%.
I was going to say, like, 20.
It would have to get to 25 to 30. If I feel like it's getting to 30, yes, because what I'll do is I'll go to, let's see here. Let's look at this lineup. I can go get a Kyle Seager. I know it's left on left, but still, you can go get Taylor Motter, Danny Valencia.
Danny, not off the start, we hope. But
no, man. But still, you know, he still does career. In his career, he still does hit lefties pretty well. So,
by the way, quick note that I saw here. Chen does have a bit of history of success against the Mariners, 3-3 with a 3.304 ERA and 8 career starts. That includes a 2-1 record with a 2.81 ERA and 5 starts at Safeco Field. Interesting to note.
Very interesting.
For all you Cruz haters out there. All right, we've got – what do we got here? Two more games left. Let's talk about these real quick. Colorado Rockies, I know this is one that you wanted to talk about. The lefty Kyle Freeland going up against the lefty of the Dodgers, Hyunjin Ryu. Now, I actually took him deep and rode to the show the other night, but that's neither here nor there. What are we looking at here? Freeland, he's the one that had the complete game, correct?
No,
that was Chatwood. I'm confusing my Rockies. They're all the same to me.
Yeah, you got Freeland. Obviously, he's a lefty against the Dodgers. You can play him. Just make sure if you're playing multiple teams to play a couple Dodgers or so. This is his first start outside of Coors Field. His first start in Coors Field went phenomenal. His second start, not so much.
KD likes him.
Yeah, he's talking about him. Lefties against the Dodgers is a thing and will be a thing until they fix whatever they need to fix. And then, of course, we've got the hockey style lineup changes that Dave Roberts throws out there.
Sure.
Nolan is off limits, I do believe. Not saying that you can't play him. I just wouldn't. The reason is because for all of his tears that he causes the Giants, not the same with the Dodgers. But I believe Cargo is the guy that tears up the Giants. Or the Dodgers, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to look deeper into their numbers a little bit. And then, of course, you got DJ Charlie. Trevor Story's interesting. He got off the schneid the other night with a home run. Actually hit the ball hard a lot over the weekend, so he might be coming out of his current funk to start the season. And over his career, he has a, and I quote, 321 ISO versus left-handed pitching.
Hey now.
So.
All right. By the way, your boy Charlie Blackman, 5-12 career off Hyunjin Ryu, so keep that in mind. Yeah, Freeland actually did pretty well against the Dodgers. He actually beat Ryu on April 7th. He only gave up one run, four hits, six strikeouts in six innings. That was that 2-1 game at Coors Field. Rockies did win 2-3 from the Dodgers in that series, so keep that in mind. What do we got here? That's all I got, actually. Anything more?
Who was it here that had Logan Forsythe's interesting. Gastiel Puig, especially if he's in the cleanup hole. And then Kiki. And then God help us, and I'll be taking 800 milligram ibuprofen because of that damn drum.
I like drums. They're cool.
Drums are cool. I was a drummer, but I hate the one in Chavez Ravine.
I took a percussion class in seventh grade. Didn't really keep up with it, but it's always because they gave me that little dumb drum pad to bang. I wanted the real thing, baby. They didn't give it to me. All right, let's stop talking about my percussion career and get to the last MLB game of the night. We've got the Arizona Diamondbacks at the San Diego Padres. Shelby Miller for the Diamondbacks. The righty, what the hell is Cozart's name?
Jared
Cozart with the right-hander, is the right-hander in this one. So you had some intrigue on this one. Take it away, my friend.
Yeah, Shelby Miller is a very, very interesting. However, he's one of those I would do a hedge stack with. People are... Or he's favored according to Vegas, but I'm not sold on it. He's looked decent, but not great. He's looked a lot better than last year. But for the Padres, Meyer, Solarte, Schimpf, Renfro, all in play for me.
Yes.
And even Manuel Margot. I would probably go there. For the Diamondbacks, it's Pollock, Peralta, Goldschmidt, Lamb.
Okay. Now, I don't know how you feel about this, but when I'm picking hitters at Petco, I like going with the left-handers. I feel like right field is it's not exactly the most advantageous spot for a hitter. But any sentiments on that?
I think that you're still swayed a little bit from previous years and not looking more into last year. Just because when they originally built the ballpark, they didn't have some of those buildings out there beyond left center field. They put some of those buildings up, and then they put that humongous scoreboard, video board up there. And ever since then, it's just kind of changed everything. It is. It is. Giancarlo Stanton almost took out his face on that board. So you've got those options or those things coming into play, and it plays a lot better, as far a lot more neutral than pitcher heavy now. So,
okay. All right. Any? I guess that'll probably do it for us on the show. Any don calls for this one?
No, not right now.
All right. I'm going to go with my boy Miguel Sano. We were talking about Josh Tomlin and all his struggles against right-handed batting. And, I'm going with Sano on that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't argue with that. I mean, that's a good one. Little chalky, but good.
Play the numbers, my friend.
when it comes to calling something as crazy as that, then yes.
Yes, indeed. All right. Once again, if you're not a member with us, make sure you do so. DFSArmy.com. You can check out all the different packages that we have available for our listeners out there. And, you know, we're going to have a lot going on today between NBA and MLB. So, you know, I like to have my hands in a little bit of everything. I took the day off for NBA yesterday. I really didn't like the slate at all, but I'm back tonight, folks. No written material, but you do get this podcast and all the MLB notes out there. I on a night like this, I probably shouldn't have the notes, but you know, I had to do the podcast, so I might as well put them out, right?
There you go.
All right, folks, we go. Peace
out.